Mini-episode 530 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by The Unheard Scene, your home for great music interviews of all stripes. Follow them on the web at unheardscene.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. The history of Royal Rumble Anthology rolls on here in the FDH Lounge. It's part 1C. Of course, part 1 is 1988 to 1992. I am Rick Morris here with Kyle Ross, who birthed the idea for this series. We are doing 1990 this time around, and we've established now the previous 2 years, 88 and 89, in parts 1A and 1B, for the setup of how the Royal Rumble came to be, all the background that you need to know for this series. Check out the first half of 1A. We got into it there, and we'll not really be getting into it subsequently. 1990 was a very interesting year. The second time that this was on pay-per-view, it had a very different feel to it, of course, than 88, which was, as we noted, a USA Network show. And in Orlando this time around. And Kyle, of the number of things that we're curious about this show, the announcers kept bragging about how jam-packed the arena was, the crowd size. They were fetishizing the crowd size, and you couldn't fit an extra person in here if you tried. Tony Schiavone and Jesse Ventura, by the way.
I'm glad you referenced it, was because Tony Schiavone called the show.
Yes.
This is one of two pay-per-views he called with Jesse, the other one being SummerSlam 89.
You know what's
Jesse
funny
was great, always tormenting Tony Schiavone.
He was.
Here and in the WCW days.
But you know what? It was like a home field advantage kind of a thing.
Yeah,
because on this show, Tony Schiavone was neutered. Tony Schiavone didn't say boo back to Jesse Ventura. In WCW, he just no-sold him sometimes to the point of obnoxiousness.
Yeah, which he also did to Bobby Heenan.
Yes, he did. But this was interesting.
I hate Tony Schiavone, by the way.
I
don't know him personally, but I think he's dumb.
He wore on me by the end of his wrestling career. But I liked him in places.
Remember Vince Russo brought him back to, like, TNA in the early part
heel.
Of TNA?
Yes.
And it was like, Tony, I thought you were one of the best damn play-by-play guys in the business. And I've been madder in life. Mm-hmm. I know I have. But not over wrestling, I think. I remember, like, looking through that and wanting to, like, jump to the screen and, like,
but that was the greatest heel move you could make in 03, because the memories were still fresh of the last couple of years at WCW. The greatest heel move
I think there were better heel
fit.
Heel tactics you could do than put over Tony Schiavone as a good announcer in 03.
I don't think you're a good heel.
I think you just sound like an idiot.
Guys like me and you would get an aneurysm from that. But Schiavone was on the call here again. I think you and I
Jesse
agree.
Ventura wearing a Mickey Mouse sweater, by the way.
Yeah.
Not a good look.
And
who told him to do that?
I don't understand that at all. I don't get that. And in very anticlimactic fashion, because it was with Tony Schiavone and not with Vince McMahon or his more famous pairing with Gorilla Monsoon, Jesse Ventura's swan song at the Royal Rumble. This would be the last one that he would call.
Yes, and he calls WrestleMania 6, and that's the last show he does. He leaves, I think he leaves right before SummerSlam event.
Yeah, and ended up having the contract issue with them there and questions about his pay and whatnot. So
Jesse was never the greatest analyst, but he was always entertaining.
He was.
You know, he was one of those guys, he really invented the modern heel announcer.
Right.
You know, that JBL has never been up to, you know, I remember getting into a fight with a certain someone back at the Sports Talk Network about, you know, that was on another show.
Uh-huh.
About the exploits of JBL. I really enjoyed JBL in his first, now he's terrible. But because he's just basically saying whatever Vince McMahon tells
him,
so it's not his fault.
He's the voice of Vince.
But Ventura was like, he was great in that he wasn't the voice of anybody. You talk about his Monsoon being his more famous pairing. I always loved when he would torment McMahon.
Yeah.
And Vince couldn't really say anything back to him. So.
But it was what I always liked with him and with Monsoon, when they were both at their best, they weren't caricatures of the heel face announcers. Jesse Ventura, more so in his early years, but throughout, would occasionally give credit to the faces when they did something. And Gorilla Monsoon, most famously with Ric Flair in 92, gave credit where credit was due. I like when they're not caricatures of themselves in that way.
I also liked when Savage had turned babyface. I guess we are going back to 1988 now, after all. He would always say, you know, I've been on this guy's bandwagon longer than anybody.
Yeah.
That always amused me.
Well, that is pretty funny.
But,
you know?
How about the Orlando crowd? I couldn't find it, because I'll be honest with you, I didn't rewatch the undercard of this. Did they keep on, and I'm talking about on the network, the fan segment when Sean Mooney went out in the streets and interviewed the fans? Did they keep that on?
I don't think so. I don't remember that. I could be wrong, but I don't remember that. That sounds like something so heinous that I would remember it.
Well, you don't remember the Gap-Tooth Woman?
Oh, I remember you referencing that. That was not on there. I would have remembered that.
It wasn't?
She put over what, Jake Roberts?
They were interviewing all these fans. Who do you think's going to win? And the fans had all these, like, awful token comments.
But I think that one's on YouTube.
Yes. This woman pops out of nowhere. She is hideous looking. I mean, I don't mean to disparage anyone. She probably died by 1991 of meth anyway.
Oh, God.
But she, like, has, like, this huge gap in her mouth, and she just goes, Jake the Snake. She had just probably got done smoking a cigarette. You have got to find this, people.
Okay.
Well, I talked about on the old SNS days. I remember showing the Ryan, and he just laughed so hard. We would just die.
You know what would have been the greatest storyline continuity ever? If she showed up freebasing crack with Jake the Snake and Beyond the Mat. Wouldn't that have been something?
It would have been. I told you, you should have gone over the 1990 Royal Rumble. God, was she hideous. Look, this one was a little worse. Do you know what she reminded me of? She reminded me of that meth head. I can't remember the season in Breaking Bad. Remember the one?
Wendy? Which one? Is that the one that was friends with Jesse?
Not Wendy, no.
Not
remember
Wendy.
Jesse? He had to kill them with the ATM.
Oh, the ATM. Okay.
It was the couple.
Yeah.
They were, like, really annoying. This lady reminded me of the woman. In that storyline.
We're Breaking Bad. That's awesome.
So, whatever. That's enough. Let's get to the 1990 Rumble, should we?
Yeah, we should. Not much to say about the undercard. A Bushwhackers match that sucked, as always.
By the way, the Rougeaux's very low on the totem pole. They were on their way out.
Yeah.
Jacques grew a beard for this.
Yes. I don't understand. This was about 15 minutes before he came back as the Mountie, basically. Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the Big Boss Man, unsurprisingly below par. I mean, pretty much what you would expect. Boss Man was a guy who could be in decent matches with a guy who could carry him. Duggan, not so much.
Both guys were still kind of over at this point. Duggan was clearly on the downside.
Yes.
Boss Man was about ready to get a face turn and a big push.
Yes.
But there was no build-up for this. It was weird that they were paired together.
Here's the thing, and I want to point this out about the next match, too, that I'm going to mention. Beefcake and Genius, that was one where they were using it. It was a contrivance to set up.
Oh, that served a purpose.
Yeah,
to
set up Beefcake and Perfect.
Yeah,
yes.
To get the heat, basically, because Perfect was feuding with Hogan at this time. And it was kind of to put the heat for Perfect with Beefcake. It was kind of to transition Perfect down.
Well, it was. But here's my thought about that. And Duggan Bossman being a match with no build-up. Is that, again, we have to remember that 1990, we still had another year or two or three left before pay-per-views were becoming commonplace and there was more on the calendar. You could put matches without a program on a pay-per-view in 1990 and people wouldn't crap on it like they would today. Every match on a pay-per-view today should serve a purpose because that's your monthly culmination and build to the next month.
Yeah, I mean, the Rumble... as a pay-per-view was a one-match show at this point still.
It was basically
the Royal Rumble is going to be it's the bulk of the show, and we just kind of have to – I think their opinion was, it's like, all right, we got to kind of throw some other stuff on here to fill up 3 hours.
Right.
But the whole point is there were a lot of long segments on this thing.
Well,
I think every single guy cut a brief promo leading up to the match, which, by the way, is fine.
Yeah.
But, like, it was huge time for, like, leading up to the match.
Yeah.
They had, like, half the guys cut it, and then they cut back to Tony and Jesse. Mm-hmm. They're like, all right, here's more people talking about the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it. It was just, it just shows just how
pretty generic. I mean, how many different ways can you talk about I'm going to win the Royal Rumble?
Well, especially when you know it's Hercules. You know, I mean, I don't think anyone bought that, but at least, you know, I mean, I don't have an issue with giving guys TV time to put themselves over. What they do with it is up to themselves. I think my point is, it just goes to show what kind of, you know, other than the Rumble match itself.
Well,
the pay-per-views were throwaways in their mind.
Since you're talking segments, I'll mention one more before I get to an undercard match that I liked anyways. But the Sherry and Sapphire segment with Brother Love. Again, way too long, hokey, horrible, time-filling match, overacting.
Would be on Raw today.
Yeah, complete gaga.
Yeah, this is in the same vein as the Bravo. So this continues our Bravo bench press, Warrior
the
pose down. Although,
the
Bravo thing didn't really do anything. But this did, and I don't like, and unlike Warrior Root, I don't like where Sapphire Sherry led us to.
Yeah.
Led us to, you know, the mixed tag at WrestleMania. But it had a purpose. I mean, whether or not it was entertaining and too long
We talked about this during the History of WrestleMania anthology. Total one-match show. But if somebody puts a gun to your head and says, what's the second biggest match on the show? It was Savage and Sherry against Sapphire and Dusty Rhodes. Now,
which is sad.
Yeah, it is. Now, again,
I don't like that WrestleMania.
You could have done the same program with Savage Rhodes, which would have been a legitimate 1A match on a pay-per-view at WrestleMania. Savage Rhodes, in and of itself, would have still been a big deal in 1990.
Yeah, the use of, you're right.
But so again,
yeah, the use of the women was
it bad. It was horrible. The other match, too, again.
Brother Love had run his course by this point, too.
It was a caricature of a caricature at that point. You and I will probably always disagree on the merits of one Ron Garvin, but Garvin Valentine, this is kind of a famous match on the undercard, a very hard-hitting match.
Famous?
Famous for the pinfall attempts.
Oh, yes.
Because everybody remembers that. Look, it was overdone. It was
infamous,
way overdone.
I think is the
infamous.
Term.
Well, yeah, maybe that's why you didn't understand where I was going with it. I should have used the word infamous. It was way overdone. Okay, these guys are used to going for pinfalls.
Let's
set
it up.
It's
a submission match.
Yeah.
It's a submission match, and they kept going for pins.
Yeah.
And the announcer was like, oh, no, remember, folks, pins don't count.
Yeah. It was the blow-off to their feud, but again,
they had good matches.
And like I said the year before, with Haku and Race, tough guys stiffing each other. I will always give bonus points for that. Garvin and Valentine are both hard-hitting guys. I like a good snug match. I like that. And
Ron Garvin's WWE run was terrible. And I don't like Ron Garvin as much as you do. But I don't have a look, the pinning thing is really dumb.
Right.
And it bothers me with this match. The Hammer Jammer is also pretty dumb.
By the way, you know.
But look, these two did. Like I cut in there and said, I apologize.
No.
They had good house show matches right before this, the end of 89.
Yep.
You could find them, and they're pretty good, and they are hard-hitting.
Yeah.
This was okay.
Okay.
This was okay. Like, I don't like, other than the stupid pinning stuff, I don't hate this match. And at least, compared to a lot of the other stuff we've talked about on the undercards of these shows, it was a feud.
Yes.
It was a blow. Well, the six-man 89. So at least this kind of served somewhat of a purpose. It wasn't total time filler.
And I admit that I haven't seen the other Garvin Valentine house show matches, so maybe
they're
there's
good.
Better
you
stuff
need to
look
out
them up there. I'll look for them.
YouTube before the,
I should,
before
I
the
should.
WWE police get
them. I'm a big Ron Garvin guy. I should check those out. So we get to the match itself, and we get to, and you and I have talked about this, it was a nice long stretch for DiBiase in this match. I feel like, particularly with the way that DiBiase was treated in the match, because you and I have talked about this before, neither one of us likes the whole Warrior Rude Redux in 1990 for the SummerSlam program. If you weren't going to feed Earthquake to Warrior at SummerSlam, which we agree probably should have been done, but if you're going to save Earthquake for Warrior, I look at a match like this and I go, why not DiBiase? It should have been DiBiase instead of just being a Saturday night's main event match in the fall of 1990 to set up Warrior Savage subsequently.
Who should have been Warrior's contender after WrestleMania?
That's
okay.
What I'm saying.
Okay.
You established DiBiase in this way. And
DiBiase wasn't really doing anything during that period either.
Yeah.
He sort of feuded with the Boss Man, but that didn't go anywhere. And then he wound up doing the thing where he bought Sapphire. Hello.
This could have been a launch to something significant because all you got to do is say, For most people, you don't have to contrive a world title program. Now, he created his own title. All you got to do is have him say, I'm sick of having this company recognize this paper champion instead of my belt, which, boom, there you go.
It would not have been any – it would not have been worse than Rick Rude.
It would have been a better match, too.
Yeah, at that point it would. DiBiase was better worker than Rude at that point.
By the way, nitpick point on my part.
It didn't matter because Hogan stole all the heat anyway.
Right. The million-dollar belt, to have it be half the size of the big gold belt in WCW, I felt kind of made it look, you know, dime store. Go all the way with it. Make like a $5 million thing if you're going to have the guy carrying it around.
They made it a big...
It wasn't... What was it? Like 9 inches top to bottom?
I don't know.
Come on, bro.
Get, no,
okay.
Get out of here.
All right. I don't
know.
Want to
once again, you have me, and then you just veer completely. That's dumb. Get out of here with that.
All right.
All right. Let's talk about the Rumble. So, this, it sounds like, in our very rogue pre-production meetings that
yes.
we like to do between takes, that this is one that we have a big disagreement on.
Very big.
I really like this Rumble, and I still have it in my top 7 of all time, which I think is pretty high.
I don't think it'll be in my top 7, but
okay.
We'll see.
So why do I have it that high? Well, it's the first time we saw a couple things. We talk about, you know, some of the Rumble trademarks that we'd come to know. You already referenced DiBiase. So he draws number 1 the year after drawing number 30.
Yep.
And they played that up. And they leave him. So when you put a top heel in early
yep.
and let him go long, it gets over.
And he goes 45-03, setting the new longevity record.
Yeah, he really did get over. You know, obviously there was a heel a couple years later that, you know, kind of took this and took it to a whole different level that
right.
hasn't ever been reached. But when you put a top heel in early and let him go long, it all get over. Also, when you have a heel alone in the ring and you bring out his face rival
mm-hmm.
while playing the music. Now everyone gets music, so
right.
It's so the music part's immaterial. Now that spot gets over. It was funny. You want to talk about nitpicking
mm-hmm.
nuances?
Okay.
Check out what I noticed. So they played music only at the beginning for the first couple guys.
Yes,
Coco Ware, Jannetty,
yeah,
and Jake Roberts, who comes out number 4. You're gonna tell me that part didn't get that was. Unbelievable.
Right.
You know, the music plays, the crowd went freaking batshit
right.
for Jake Roberts. But it's funny, I only referenced that because after Roberts comes in number 4, they didn't play anyone else's music.
And that's weird. No, but
they did it because I think they really were teasing it. Like, they learned, and it's funny because now everyone gets music
yeah.
and now it's just an afterthought. The whole thing of, all right, the heel's standing there, who is it? And then you hear the music
yeah.
and the crowd just goes wild.
Yeah.
Back then,
it wasn't
as taken for granted.
Yeah, the Pavlovian response was greater back in the day because it was rarer. You and I are, I'm sure, going to agree to disagree about this. Coco Ware, number 1, a guy that was a guy that was beaten like a rug on TV for like 3.5 years.
Well, he was there, and he was there to get beaten like a rug. Again, early on in the and Jannetty did no better, really.
Jannetty would have been a better choice, though.
It was just to establish DiBiase is all they were doing.
Yeah.
As eliminating guys, it was kind of cool. He was like, you know, he eliminates Coco Ware, he sticks up the one finger. He's
uh-huh.
like, all right, 28 more to go or whatever. Then it's 2, it's 27
yep.
more to go. I thought that I had no problem with that.
And again, you
I
know,
no
they,
problem with
they
that.
Reestablish him in this match. They rebuild him, and then the rest of 1990 don't do much with him. So when you're talking about right guy going over, whatever, I'm not saying DiBiase should have gone over, and especially wire to wire. But to me, you do with somebody that you built during a match afterward matters.
He was in the middle of that, as far as the short term, he was
yeah.
in the middle of the Jake Roberts feud. They had
yeah.
a pretty disappointing match at WrestleMania 6.
Yeah.
That was, you know, you talk, if the mixed tag's not number 2 on that show, Jake
yeah.
DiBiase is. So he was, and then, like, I don't know what happened over the fall. I don't know if there was an injury there or something like that, because
yeah.
he didn't even work SummerSlam.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he gets in, the star power, though, not just DiBiase and Roberts, is really strong.
It was
the first third of this match.
Bigger than 89, which was much bigger than 88.
Yes. You get Savage comes out, and the crowd freaks out.
Yep.
Because Jake gets double-teamed. Then Roddy Piper comes out to make it an even. When Roddy Piper, I mean, this crowd.
Yeah.
You talk about, you know, all these references. Oh, what a packed house it is. I'll give you a reference. This crowd was molten. By the way, 4 Hall of Famers.
Yeah, true.
4 bone, and not like, you know, like lame Hall of Famers, like Coco Beware is.
Right.
Okay, like 4 bona fide.
Or the guy that was Vince McMahon Sr.'s limo driver.
Yeah. Dusty Rhodes comes in early.
Yep.
Bret Hart comes in early.
Yep.
you've got some big names early. This is a hot match early. The crowd was into this. Tell me I'm wrong, Rick Morris.
They were. But again,
so what do you not like about
this? Well, this is another thing, too. You and I talked about this off air. I know you think this is another of my infamous Nelson nitpicker points here. The whole thing, and granted, at this point in time, you know, probably the two biggest heels in the company, I guess, DiBiase and Savage, they're working together in the early part of the match.
Tony Schiavone
speculates that DiBiase was paying off Savage and other guys in there. Okay, this is a company that doesn't want to acknowledge outside history. In 1990, they're a company that doesn't even want to leverage their own history. How do you not leverage the DiBiase-Savage feud of 88 that dominated the year, everything that went on between them? I just don't understand that.
Okay, Nelson nitpicker. You know what happened?
What?
Remember, DiBiase gave him his scepter in 89 as a gift. What a token of friendship. They had already buried the hatchet.
Is that where you got the scepter from?
Yes,
I didn't.
Was.
Okay.
Yeah. It's funny. Had you not told me this ahead of time before we did this, I probably would have been like, "Yeah, you tool," or something.
You would have had to spring that on me.
But now that you're like, "Oh, I know you think I'm Nelson Nitpicker," and I was like, "Okay, he's going to bring up the Savage DiBiase thing." I'm like, "How am I going to counter this?" And also, was doing this too, which I enjoyed.
All right, well, you got the better of me on that. Well played.
What do you got to say about that?
I got nothing. You got me on
that
one.
What do you
got
to say about the great history of the WWF?
I still would have liked to have heard the announcers put that over. Like, they were big rivals.
Tony Schiavone wasn't there. He didn't know.
Because nobody ever knows anything from beyond their starting date in the company. Okay, well, that's more continuity, I suppose. You talked about Piper. His segment with Bad News Brown set up their WrestleMania match.
Yeah, that was a new spot too. A guy's eliminated and he pulls a guy out.
Yep.
That felt like it was a big thing. It was pushed as a big thing. That was another disappointing match at WrestleMania 6, by the way. But that was something there too.
But that was another thing too of like a classic example of like two guys that needed somebody to help lead them to a good match. Yeah, like Piper and Lawler together. Who didn't know that was going to be a train wreck at King of the Ring 94? You know what I mean? Piper and Bad News Brown.
Sometimes guys just don't work together well. Even if they're good separate. You know, if they're
but
good
again,
separately.
like Piper especially was such a punch and kick kind of guy. He needed more than Bad News Brown to be lifted to a good match. You know what
I
mean?
It probably didn't help that he painted half of himself black.
That too, yeah. Doing the whole... he was Michael Jackson before it was Michael Jackson.
Yes, we can't speak to Bad News anymore, but he probably would tell you, from the grave, he would probably tell you that he didn't care for that much.
And from what I've heard from shoot interviews, he most assuredly did not. More Nelson nitpicker stuff. I told you off air, I don't like this. Andre was not referenced as WWF Tag Team Champion when he came to the ring. Demolition did attack him when they got in there, and they referenced it with the Colossal Connection with Haku subsequently, but not the tag team titles. Never mentioned that. I don't know why. Why are you afraid to mention?
Because I wonder. When did that air? That's why.
It happened in December of 90.
Well, is that when it was the match actually happened or when it aired?
When it happened. Now, this is a month
that's
later.
The thing.
The leg couldn't have been that bad, could it?
I'll have to look that up. That may have been a thing.
But they referenced...
Was this in the middle of January? I don't know the dates.
Like the middle of January.
Should I bring this up? I'm going to look this up.
Schiavone subsequently referenced Demolition wanting a piece of Andre, which tells me it's that Andre was already the champion. They were acting like Andre...
The Royal Rumble 1990 took place on January 21st, 1990.
This is so pathetic that I remember this, but it would be like December 13th or so, I think, in like Huntsville, Alabama. I can't even believe I'm spitting this out to you.
Okay, let's see if I can get an air date on this.
Okay. And I assume you're on the History of WWF website, which is...
It's indispensable, actually.
Yeah,
to be honest with you.
Oh, my God.
To be honest with you, I'm...
Free plug to them.
To be honest with you, I'm trying to be real cheap and just going to Wikipedia.
Okay, well, that... I don't know if you're going to find it there.
Shown on obviously you don't. Ye have little faith, Richard J. Morris.
It's R. I don't know where the J comes from.
I don't know. I'm going to keep calling it that.
It's kind of more entertaining,
yes,
though.
Yes.
It is. I'm not going to lie. It's more entertaining than my real name.
Shown on TV December 30th.
Okay, well,
so 3 weeks.
So they were walking.
So
there, the
was,
middle.
There was a 3 week thing. I don't know. Maybe their audience.
So they were walking.
I don't
know
why
ground.
You would. You're right. I don't know why you wouldn't put it over.
Okay.
All right. It was dumb, but I don't think it matters.
They were walking the middle ground of their. Involved with one another, and if you were there in the arena that night, we're not going to insult your intelligence. But okay, so that's why they never referenced it specifically. Still seems stupid to me. Rick Rude comes out a little bit before it reaches zero on the countdown, and ultimately what? Shivani and Jesse didn't know what to make of it, and they never settled it.
Screwed up.
Okay,
probably screwed up.
Time cue maybe, but they were both like, "Well, I don't know what happened there." And they never cleared it up.
Well, wait a minute. Well, we're also skipping over something very large in the match. That was after the Hogan Warrior thing, right?
That was. Yes. But I mean, I figured we'd get to.
Okay, you're being very
silly. I'm mentioning
silly
tidbits here.
These
okay.
are if these
All
are
right.
the reasons you don't like
no,
this
no,
Royal
no,
Rumble,
no, no,
you
no.
are a damn
they're not,
fool.
They're not the reasons I don't like it. I'm just these are just that's just on my list.
The
of
middle
notes.
Third dragged a little.
It
bit.
It did. It dragged. Rhodes eliminated Savage, so that was building on the feud that I think the feud started earlier in the card. Right
there
was
yeah,
no,
no
real
there,
feud
had been no there had been no
okay.
tension between those two at all before
okay.
the show.
Yeah, so I mean. Basically, I'm sort of doing a Royal Rumble type thing here of clearing out the ring so that we can focus on Hogan and Warrior, because I think we've touched on, aside from the way the match ended and aside from the spot that we're going to get into, I think we have now cleared out most of the other brush we had to get through.
Yes. So, the Hogan Warrior thing.
Yes.
So the middle third drags a little bit.
Yes.
Warrior comes in first. He's the guy who gets to eliminate DiBiase.
Right.
Hogan's in there, comes in too, and they both clear the ring. And it's just those two. I defy you, other than Flair, the moment Flair wins the 92 Rumble, of naming a better Royal Rumble moment than Hogan and Warrior clearing the ring, turning around, and looking
it's
at
each
other.
It's a great moment.
It's unbelievable.
It's
As
a great
child,
moment.
It was Markout City because... It's funny, we've talked about how, you know, obviously we now the Royal Rumble is the start of the road to WrestleMania.
Right.
And this is how, in this instance, in a match where you had the actual world champion
yeah.
participating in the Royal Rumble, he goes over, of
only
course.
Only time the champion ever
And
won.
Probably the only time you ever will, you'll ever see a world champion win
yes.
the Rumble. This is how they birthed the big angle for WrestleMania 6.
Yes.
And... I thought it was brilliantly done. The crisscross of doom was a little laughable.
That was a little much.
Especially because they never, neither of them ever, did either Hulk Hogan or Ultimate Warrior ever do a crisscross in any other match?
Probably not. Well, here's the other thing, too. And that they did a little bit to set up before this. Because each of them, in the interviews before the match, name-checked, among others, the other one.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, was that... I guess that wasn't just for Coliseum video. I wonder if that was because, like, leading up to the event,
yeah,
the thing, like, I'm taking myself back to being 9 years old and it being 1990. There was no buildup between the two. They were just two
no.
really. They were just the two most over guys in the company.
No, but that's but here's the thing, though. And again, the company has always been big on conditioning the people for whatever. We see in 2015 trying to condition people to accept Roman Reigns has its limits. But at that time, everything happened with conditioning, and most of the time it was successful. And they wanted to make sure when it happened that people wouldn't be like, oh, it's Hulk Hogan and
I don't think
Bushwhacker Butch. We know who's going to get the better of who here. They wanted to make sure when it happened that we all understood that moment was titanic because nobody had ever been put on Hogan's level on the babyface side before. That had never
Didn't
happened.
Didn't even need the conditioning? Like, because it's funny, I remember seeing those promos, and I was like, oh, wow, this is kind of like,
yeah, but,
this kind of telegraphed it. I don't think it was even,
but,
like,
but
you're had those interviews not, had you not seen those interviews
yeah.
beforehand? Have they not existed? You're telling me that doesn't get over?
Because
the live crowd didn't hear it.
It probably still would, but here's the thing, too. We've talked about how much in that era... And granted, bear with me because this is a year or two past where he peaked. But Hacksaw Jim Duggan, the pops that he got, if it was Duggan and Hogan and they turn around and are staring at each other.
It would not have been as big. It's because it was the two guys. The live crowd, remember, didn't see. Like, the live crowd caught on right away. You could hear the, like, uh-oh, like, whoa. look who's the two in there. The live crowd didn't see those interviews.
Well, I don't know. And that's just the thing here, too, because maybe Warrior had gotten to that point by early 1990.
He had. I don't think there was any conditioning. Conditioning helps, but I don't think it was necessary here.
Well, the thing, like Hulk Hogan, I think they just weren't taking any chances. He never had any peers on the babyface side. Yeah, you could say Savage, but, I mean, subliminally at least, he was always presented as 1A to Hogan the whole time anyways.
Yeah, sure.
So, no, you're right, that was a huge moment. For me, it just doesn't elevate the entire match, but ultimately it ends with Warrior going out. And you know,
similar to 89 with, like, kind of the Hogan, oh, I eliminated you, but didn't mean to eliminate you,
yes,
kind of thing.
Exactly.
Which, and similar to 89, this has, I thought, had kind of an anticlimactic ending. Not quite as anticlimactic.
Yeah.
So in this case, you know, you had DiBiase buying number 30 the previous year.
Right.
And the announcers had told you already, and again, I don't know if the live crowd knew this, but if you watched the show, you did, that Mr. Perfect was 30. It was announced beforehand that Perfect was 30.
Right.
He had drawn, quote, the perfect number. And there is a rumor, and I don't know if it's true, that Perfect was originally supposed to go over here, and Hogan bulked, and Hogan wanted to win.
I can totally believe that, because they were setting up for a program with
him. Well, they'd had one, but look, and I'm as critical of Hogan as anyone, certainly. That did not draw well on the house show circuit, Hogan Perfect. And I know that everyone was going to want to put the fault with everyone but Perfect. But Perfect was booked. He was undefeated. I mean, he was like, here's a guy who's never lost.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it didn't work. Look, I think personally, having the world champion win a match like this seems silly.
Right.
Here's another reason. Maybe it was because he didn't win in 89 that Hogan felt, well, you know what, we're going to have this event, and I'm not going to win it 2 years in a row.
Maybe.
I think it would have made him not – had he not won here, it would have made his win the next year seem maybe not quite as inevitable and
right,
boring. But, you know, a case could be made that Perfect should have gone over here, and then that would have set up him against Hogan on the main event in 1990 with, you know, what was supposed to be Mike Tyson as the ref but ended up being Buster Douglas.
It would, yeah. And
he would have done a great bump from a Buster Douglas punch, I feel.
Oh, that would have been amazing. Absolutely. It would have been shades of Shawn Michaels SummerSlam 05. But I think when you look at this, having them in isolation at the end of the match, we talk about this when it's the last two guys in there and when there's a disparity in size physically. I will say again, for as much as
that's
I felt like they should
the
have gone
feud, and you know what? That's probably why the feud didn't draw.
Yeah, yeah, because
people
again,
didn't perceive Perfect as a threat to Hogan.
Well, and again, and you know, in particularly in comparison to the AWA days, he was really on the gas physically, allegedly. But I mean, he was bulked up relative to what he had been earlier in his career, but still was not taken seriously as a physical threat to Hogan. In that way, it was an anticlimactic thing. I mean, it wasn't the thing of, like, Hogan, like, even, like, pointed to the side of the ring that he ran and threw. I mean, that's a jobber move right there. That's I'm throwing a jobber over the top rope. So, if anything,
this felt like the blow-off of Hogan Perfect.
It did.
A feud that really
it was a
didn't get over to the level they probably hoped.
Total house show feud, because the only thing on TV previous to that was when they gimmicked the whole. It was when they reprised Billy Graham and Bob Backlund with a Perfect breaking the WWF Championship, and they never really gave you resolution to that aside from the Royal Rumble.
Well, they did do the match after this on the next Saturday Night's main event. While you know they
did
kind
they?
Of
okay,
it was Hogan and Warrior against Perfect and Genius.
Okay.
Because the Genius had beaten Hogan, got his glorious count-out, went over Hogan, starts the event, and they did that tag match, but Perfect and Genius, in kind of the same vein as Twin Towers, were basically just backdrops for the angle, because the whole point of that match was to further the tension between Hogan and Warrior.
Right.
But Perfect was used in that spot, and they, you know, they did a U-turn and went to Savage.
Even
for the,
in 1990,
for the,
you have to believe that when they set up a match like that, everybody looks at it and goes, out of those four, I wonder who's doing the job.
Yeah.
And that's what he was there for, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I like this Rumble. I don't know what you're wrong, like, what's wrong with it.
Yeah,
I think it's really good. And it's
just,
there's a lot of good named guys in here.
It just felt like it bogged down in a lot of stretches. When I talk about the great spots the previous year with, say, the Rockers and the Brainbusters.
That's not really a great spot. That's just four guys that you like.
Well, again, I mark out for all four of those guys, and it just seemed like it was less of those kind of guys and more of like the bulky bodybuilders doing boring spots. Can I use any more alliteration there?
But I don't whatever. Know. To me, I didn't think that anything in 89 was as hot as the first third of this match. You had bigger names in there. I mean, you had the DiBiase Roberts feud, the Dusty Savage feud, you know, the Piper Bad News, that beginning of the feud. There was nothing like that in 89. This to me is a clear upgrade over 1989.
And I have it slightly below.
That shocks me.
I have 89 at 2.5 stars. This one at 2.25.
I got this at 3.75.
Wow. It just doesn't wow me.
That's going to be our biggest difference, I think.
It probably will be. Yeah, it just doesn't wow me. I mean, I know there's going to be ones that I score worse than this. Hint, look ahead to 91. But I don't know. And probably some of the ones in the mid-90s as well, although for the purposes of our project, I'm only watching these in the chunks we're recording them in. I have yet to get the 93 through 97, which is going to be our next chunk. You probably don't even need to rewatch for any of these
things.
There's
a few I do. You know, 96 is one that I haven't seen.
Okay.
Because
you seem to have your hierarchy already. I only have my hierarchy within the chunks that I've already
seen. You know what's funny is I probably have to rewatch like the more recent ones. Those are the ones I can never remember.
Yeah, those are the ones that are forgettable in a lot of ways, quite frankly.
Yeah, this to me is one of the most, it's got one of the most memorable spots, a red-hot first third. I put this in the upper third of Royal Rumbles.
Anticlimactic finish, as you yourself admit, though.
Yes, which hurts it a little bit.
Yeah.
The finish hurts it a little bit, but among the pre-2000 Rumbles, this is the second best one.
Second best one, wow.
Of all the Rumbles that took place before the year 2000, this is the second best one.
I have it as the third best in this group alone. I don't know that anything that happened, maybe in the late 90s, there might be. Like, I know everybody dumps on the 99 one, but
and they're behind as they should.
Yeah, but I don't know, though. Like, I have
if
a real...
If you watch 1999 and think it's better than this one, I will have you sent to a mental institution.
I have a real Attitude Era bias, though.
I thought I did, too.
Uh-huh.
All right?
Okay.
Spoiler alert. I've already watched it
again.
I actually watched it again because I wanted to compare... some of the I was writing something about this past Rumble the previous year, and I wanted to write something about the worst Rumbles ever.
Right.
So I rewatched. I've already rewatched the ones that I consider to be the worst. Most people think, and I remember watching that one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We're just no semblance of order or structure in these whatsoever. It's disgusting. But with 99, so it's
sort of like the 99 Rumble.
You watch it and you're like, Jesus, was this Austin McMahon thing over? Right.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the match happens.
Right.
I am telling you, thing sucks.
Well, the other thing, too, for everybody that thinks...
Not the worst ever, but it's very close.
Well, for everybody that thinks that Russo and Ferraro lost their fastball when they went to WCW, I will admit, when you rewatch 99, you realize it was already starting before they left there. They had peaked a little bit before they left WWF. I think no question about it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So... But we'll get to those ones subsequently. But 1990, yeah, I'll be surprised if I have it rated anywhere near historically high as you do. I don't know why we differed on this one as much. I
want to keep in mind if this is the biggest difference we have. So I've got a 3.75. You have it 2.25. That's a star and a half. That's a pretty big difference on a match.
That is. Well, I don't think we're going to differ as much on 91, but we'll see. That's going to be the next one coming up in the series, obviously.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.